Sugar man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams? Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane. Sugar man, met a false friend on a lonely, dusty road.
A lot of time is spent in the music industry predicting what's going to be a hit or not, and they're often wrong. But let's consider the unusual case of singer-songwriter Rodriguez, whose producer said he was going to be bigger than Bob Dylan. And although that didn't happen, his story happens to be much more interesting than if it had. Malik Benjalul has written, directed, edited, and produced a documentary about Rodriguez called Searching for Sugar Man, which opens today at the Angelica and Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and I'm really pleased that he could join me now, along with the subject of his film, Rodriguez himself. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to interview.
Malik, which came first for you, hearing Rodriguez's music or hearing about his story?
The story. I found a story and I was like, wow, this is probably the best story I ever heard in my life and ever going to hear. It was just this beautiful fairy tale. And it was a true story. It sounded like someone had written this story.
Well, you're from Sweden. What kinds of documentaries had you made before you discovered Rodriguez?
None. This is my first film. I done TV docs, like short stuff about music and other stuff as well. But this was my first film.
And you were in Africa when you heard the story?
Yeah, I quit my job from Swedish TV and I went backpacking, literally, in Africa and South America, looking for stories. And in Cape Town, I met the detective, because in this story there is a detective. And he told me this.
So how long after you learned about Rodriguez did you get to hear his music?
Well, because I thought they were exaggerating. Those South Africans talked about him like he was on par with Dylan and Rolling Stones.
And were you worried that he might not live up to the hype?
Yeah, I was. I mean, the comparison was ridiculous. But now I realize that it's not really those fans. It's basically every South African. Everyone who ever heard him in South Africa. I mean, I spoke to a guy only a few days ago who said he had a conversation with an American, and he had said to him, oh, that would be like imagine the 70s without Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Rodriguez. And this American said, what are you talking about? He never heard about Rodriguez. And in South Africa, he was as famous and also as dead as, you know, say, Jimi Hendrix. Everyone knew he was dead, and everyone knew.
And bigger than Elvis, many people say.
Yeah.
Rodriguez, your record label described your debut album, Cold Fact, as, quote, one of the lost classics of the 60s, a psychedelic masterpiece drenched in color and inspired by life, love, poverty, and rebellion. Were those things, life, love, poverty, and rebellion, what actually inspired the music?
Well, certainly environment shapes us all. From Ellis Island to Detroit City. I think that, sure, environment is one of the guiding things that shapes artists' lives and art.
And how much were the songs autobiographical?
Well, compared to Bob Dylan, he's a Shakespeare of modern music. And the thing is, I've written 30 songs. Bob Dylan's written thousands, you know, and quite a career. And so as he used the protest song as a vehicle, as Barry McGuire did, as Neil Young did in Ohio, as Neil Young does, Paul Simon does, I Am a Rock. I think the genre of the protest song was something I chose as a means to communicate.
And you've described yourself as a musico-politico.
Yes, sir, I am. And I am a self-taught musician. I started playing when I was 16, and I saw that as an art that I could work with and probably develop and make something of myself.
So were people like Bob Dylan and Paul Simon the influences on you?
Yes, as well as Jimmy Reed, Frank Sinatra, Ray Charles, and everything. I've done the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the zeros, the tens. I'm working on the tens.
The production on the albums can make them sound like other popular groups of the time. Love's Forever Changes, for example. But you were writing about much more difficult subjects. What do you think of the production when you listen to those records now? Would you prefer something a bit starker?
I would have done the guitar just a little lower because I could bounce that off. It was like the acoustics you were discussing in about this room. It's in that now you can see in hindsight what you would have done possibly in the past to change. But pretty much that's the way it went.
I have a feeling they try to make the music sound beautiful, partly because you have such a lovely voice.
I mean,
a lot nicer than Bob Dylan's voice.
Well, I wouldn't say it like that. I think that, well, to compare vocal signatures, I think Sinatra has his vocal signature, and in that, and Dylan, Bob Dylan, has the vocal signature that he developed as a unique instrument, his vocal, and he's certainly an American author.
Well, how old were you when these producers came to you? In fact, two different producers told you you're going to be a huge star.
And that would be Mike Theodore and Dennis Coffey and Steve Rowland.
You were in your early 20s at the time?
Yeah, in that era. But I think I grew fast in that my environment shaped me. And I think it's not... age is not just chronological.
Because you were growing up in Detroit.
Well, no, I think we all have share this childhood experience that shape us and decide who we are. And I guess the best one I can say is he conquers who conquers himself. And so all that shaping, I think I did my internship in Detroit.
Well, both of these producers told you that you'd be a big star. You had two records. When did you realize it wasn't going to happen?
Well, as I explained in the film, it's the music industry. There's no guarantees. I don't think we enter this art form, which is an art form, an industry, and a business, with the expectations of hitting at the first shot. But we sure go for it. I think young bloods like Bob Dylan and the rest of those people who put us through those times, the Rolling Stones, that made us just go ahead and Woodstock. Can you remember that? I also the World War II. It's an important lesson because it happens in a modern state. As you explained, I am a political musical.
Now, did you continue writing and playing at least for yourself after your career kind of died?
Yes, sir.
Malik, how did the rumors begin that Rodriguez had died, or more, in fact, dramatically, that he'd committed suicide on stage?
How they started, no one knows. I think if you have no information about someone that is that famous, in the end, story starts to evolve. Someone says something and then someone retells it and then it becomes a fact. So in South Africa... it was a fact. Everyone knew that.
It was an explanation for Rodriguez, their superstar, disappearing.
Yes, it was so strange. All the other superstars, they knew that Jim Morrison died in a bathtub in Paris. But Rodriguez, they had different stories. Either he shot himself dead on stage. The story you heard also that he burnt himself dead on stage, or that he OD'd. And then what happens is that one day two fans say, "This is strange. We need to find out the truth." And that's where the film kind of starts.
And Rodriguez, you were totally unaware of all of this, or that you were a superstar in South Africa?
Yes, sir. I only knew the beginning of this story that Malik Ventulu's film, Searching for Sugar Man, describes. I only knew it up to 1973, say. And then I went back to work. And so it wasn't until 96 that I learned through Sugar, who comes to Detroit from New York, visiting, and he explained to me and showed me the CD and told me about these stories. And so it was Exhibit A, and so in 98 I toured, which is the climax of Mr. Benjamin Lewis.
Film. And you were totally out of the music business at this point. You were doing construction work.
Yes, sir. I did demolition, renovation of homes and business residents and buildings, and that's what I did. And
my guests are Rodriguez, who's the subject of a film called Searching for Sugar Man, which is written, directed, edited, and produced by Malik Benjalul, and it opens today at the Angelica and the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. Malik, how did Rodriguez's albums make their way to South Africa? They barely made their way to New York City.
No, I mean, no one really knows how the first albums came. There was this story that there was this exchange student that came to South Africa from America, brought one of those 50 copies that ever was sold, because it was a failure, was enormous. I mean, he didn't sell any copies. But somehow, one of those albums got to South Africa, and they started to spread, and they became, after a while, it was released by a major company, Polydor, and it became, you know, it became the hit. Though it was censored, you couldn't hear it on radio, because Ruiz sang political stuff, and he sang about sex and drugs and stuff that,
and the government would have seen this as a music that was encouraging rebellion.
Exactly.
During the darkest days of apartheid.
Exactly. There was a line in one of the songs called Establishment Blues, where Rodriguez was singing, "The system is going to fall soon to an angry young tune." And that was actually what happened. Rodriguez inspired the first white South African rebellion against the apartheid regime. There were a group of white rock bands that started to actually say something, and they all said Rodriguez was the guy that was the inspiration.
Now, Rodriguez, you've spoken to a lot of people in South Africa in recent years. Have they explained to you, to your satisfaction, why your music resonated so much with them when it was really influenced by your life very far away in Detroit?
Well, I've got some clues about those last two questions, why it surfaced in South Africa. There's a New York rock star in music called, and his name is, he's passed, but his name is Neil Bogart, and he was with Buddha Records here, and through Sussex I met Neil Bogart because he did distribution for the label, a small label, and he's huge in the music business, and then certainly in my mind that he was one of the icons of the industry. Anyway, so I think maybe through that kind of channel, he was that it surfaced in South Africa. Also, I get a chance to meet my audience and a lot of soldiers, musicians in the audience and free spirits. I talked to one soldier who they had conscription there, and so they defended South Africa in Angola and in Namibia, which is right on top of South Africa, in defense of their country, and they were proud to serve, and they served. Anyway, one soldier told me, he says, "We made love to your music. We made war to your music." And he gave me a necklace, and it was very ceremonial, and it was very inspiring. And apparently they traded cassette tapes at the time, the technology of the time, and they would exchange that.
But you were receiving no royalty checks.
No,
for this.
Sir. No, sir.
You had no idea any of this was going on.
Oh, no, I didn't. No, I've been to South Africa four times. One tour, I did 12 cities. I've been around the world in 3 weeks. I have been to Australia four times.
But that's all since.
Tours. Since, yes. Since 98, since the discovery.
That you were alive.
Yes. From that perspective, yeah. And so, yeah, but the issues in South Africa, much like it were happening in the United States in that conscription, and here in America, the young bloods were bringing the draft cards, resisting the draft, going to Canada.
So they were hearing Vietnam and transposing it to their experience.
Sure. The Kent State, the governor, an orders of the governor firing this to the student body and killing those students who were protesting and against the war.
Now, the South Africans, suddenly, they one of them, a detective, actually a couple of people in the film, were trying to find out whether Rodriguez was still alive. And then they discovered that he was. And
yeah.
Had he already gone to perform in South Africa by the time you came to the story?
Yes. I found the story in 06, and the climax of the film is in 98. And what happens is that...
And may I interrupt? I met Mr. Benjalul in 08. We've been working this film,
so there was a lot of footage that already had been made.
But continue, Mr.
To tell the story the chronological order, what the events was that those South African detectives were like, okay, this is very, very strange. We have a guy no one knows who he is. We all know he's dead, and he's as famous as Jimi Hendrix. And one day they said, this is not, we want to know the truth. So they start to look for clues. And on the record, it's not written his real name, or it's not written where he comes from. The only place where there is any information is inside the lyrics. So they try to decipher the lyrics and find geographical references. And after years of search, they find a producer of the album. And they call him and they ask him, they are, you know, full of questions. Where was the album made? Well, it was made here in Detroit. And who made the album? Well, it was me and another producer. And the thing we really wonder here in South Africa, the thing everybody will want to know is, how did Rodriguez die? And the guy said, what do you mean? How did Rodriguez die? He said that he shot himself dead on stage. What happened? No, Rodriguez, he's alive. He's living down the street. And then...
Then they arranged to have you come and perform.
Yeah.
And how did you react when you realized that thousands and thousands of people, because you were filling large theaters and auditoriums, that thousands of people in South Africa knew the lyrics to all of your songs, that the backup musicians who are well-known musicians in South Africa knew every note of your arrangements. You look like you stayed pretty calm. Everybody talks about how calm you were, but this must have been an overwhelming experience for you.
It was epic. The audience knew my lyrics, so I knew it was genuine in that.
They were crying while you were performing.
5,000 seats, and it was emotional on both sides of that exchange. And so, it was a wonderful time, and a lot of people put me there, and I thank my lucky stars all the time. I'm a very fortunate man.
So has it revived your performing career, or is it still just South Africa?
Malik Benjaloo's film has excited my music career, so now I'm surfacing in the United States. But it's quite an exciting time.
Well, it must have been thrilling to see your story on the screen. And,
well, I'm a solid 70, you know, and so it's something that it happened so late.
Well, the film has gotten a lot of attention, and I suspect that people are going to start listening to your music again. One more thing, you have a number of different names on these records. What's your first name?
Let me clarify. I'm no mystery. My first name is Sisto.
S-I-X-T-O.
Yes. And I asked my father, about my first name, and he says, your mother named you. Well, she passed when I was 3, so...
You also sometimes appear as Jesus Rodriguez.
Oh, I use my brother. Jesus. I'm the brother of Jesus. My brother's name is Jesus. I asked my brother Jesus if he would put the copyrights in his name. And so that explains. And the other two were Six Prince and Sandriven Incorporated. And the reason I was trying to save my copyrights and like that. And it's the music business, also in this glimpse of apartheid, Mr. Benjaloo's film also explains some of our... explores and asks the hard questions about the record industry and its situations.
There. And how people sometimes can have big hits and not make a penny.
And omission, I think, of truth is also, I feel, a sin.
The film Searching for Sugar Man opens today at the Angelica and the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and it is about Rodriguez, who has been here. Talking about his life and this extraordinary thing that happened, and Malik Benjaloo, who has made the film about it. He is the writer, director, editor, and producer of Searching for Sugar Man. Thank you both so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for bringing us.
I wonder how many times you've been here.